Episode 54 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is October the 7th, 2012. I am Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my once and future brother, James Furlough.
Notice, my head is not shaved. It is full head of hair.
And mine is shaved.
It's starting to grow back in, it looks like.
Yeah, I'm going to have to trim it, though. The shaved work the shaved look was working for me. If you know what I mean.
In the ladies' side of life?
Actually, yeah, exactly. It's kind of crazy.
Whoa. Yeah.
I know. Yeah.
Keep it shiny.
Yep. I don't know if I'm going to go full Bic every week from here on out, but I might keep it high and tight for a while.
Hey, whatever it takes, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Well, nice.
But... Yeah. this week we're not going to talk about my love life. We could, but we're not going to because we got other important things to talk about, like technology and the continuing corporate opera or soap opera of corporations getting back and forth. People working for them, their favorite, the technology that they develop. What's up, buddy?
Oh, I just missed pretty much that entire line.
Oh. Like, it just... Wait a second. Wait. It's important if you missed it because you're recording it, not me.
Correct.
Okay. Where'd you lose me?
Right when you started into why we're here.
Okay, well, this week we're talking about the technology and the continuing corporate opera, soap opera corporations, dealings back and forth, blah, blah, blah. Same thing we talk about every week, people. If you're new, it's pretty cool. Listen to last week. You'll get it. Anyways, before we get into the heart of the show, this actually needs to be recorded. And it's our short disclosure to make sure we don't get sued or fired or, anything like that.
I work for Hewlett-Packard. However, I do not represent Hewlett-Packard, especially when I make fun of them. So when referring to Hewlett-Packard, I should always say I, and if I say we, I really meant to say I. I really do not represent HP in these podcasts, despite working for them and actually liking my job.
Good. That's good to know, especially today. I have a job, and if you want to follow me at Twitter, that's the extent of disclosures needed.
potential love life interest, that's another disclosure. We'll just tack that on there.
Yeah, disclosing all sorts of stuff this week. If you want to follow me on the Twitter, where I tweet and, like Big Bird knows what Twitter is. He let us know that on Saturday Night Live this week. My handle is at Matthew D. Furlough.
And I am at James Furlough.
And then, of course, you can always follow the show tweet feed at Furlough Bros. But if you don't know what all these are and you're like, I know you guys have a Facebook page and a Google Plus page, but I just can never keep track of it all. Where can I go to get all this information, including links to all the articles you talk about and cool videos you share? And the podcast links. If you want all of that, just go to furloughbros.com or furloughbrothers.com. We got both of them. They redirect to the same place. So get excited. That's our online presence, our footprint, if you will.
Yep.
Cool. So you want to get into this?
Yeah.
Without further ado. Okay.
So tell me why a certificate of deposit is 30 years old.
No, I'm not. I'm going to skip that one. I just want to throw it out there really quick. We're not going to talk about it until probably the 21st. So expect more the 21st. Wall Street Journal says The iPad Mini is in full production, which they never lie. They always know the truth. And Fortune Magazine is reporting that invites to a special media event go out on the 10th. So the only reason I bring that up at all is because the 10th is the middle of this week, and I always like to tell you what's going to happen before it happens. And this is pretty much my last chance to say it's happening. And then the actual media event will be the day before James's birthday on the 17th. And then just public knowledge, right? That's something we're hiding. And then
sure.
And then
I like to say the anniversary of the 1989 Loma Prieta earthquake.
Oh man. Yeah.
It's in California.
But yeah, that's I live near there.
I know.
I actually live pretty much on that fault line. Like
I know, I used to live there too.
Yeah, it's crazy. Oh, hey Jesse, how's it going?
See ya. She described what's really paperwork. That was random.
What's really funny about saying hi to Jesse is not only did nobody even know because you can't hear it, but she doesn't know I'm saying hi.
That's the way it is.
This is for the people that are watching the podcast as opposed to the people who are just listening, like most of you.
I think it's better to watch, except for those times when we got to cut out the video because technology is acting against us.
Yeah. Which it does on a frustratingly regular basis. I'm worried about tonight, to be totally honest.
You're a little pixely right now.
Yeah, we have a visitor, and I told her to please hold off from anything. Lisa's here. I told her to hold off from anything internet heavy, and that goes, so how much are you going to pay us? So I offered him 20% of all tonight's profits.
Yes!
For cooperation.
I would have given it all to him.
Yeah, seriously.
So what I do with my wife, because she is also, she used to, when we had Netflix, she would watch Netflix, or I would ask her not to, and then Hulu. And I had to frame it differently. I said, this is your opportunity to go do something artsy and craftsy and get away from the computer.
Thankfully, I actually think that is the plan this evening. It's that the sewing machine has been deployed. So hopefully they'll be content as can be without anything. But anyways, now that we have like 14 iPads and 17,000 laptops and 180 smartphones, like, there's just so much internet going on in this house. It's nuts. With our 1 megabyte download speed for the whole house.
Perhaps we should contribute all of our profits to getting you faster internet.
Seriously, that'll help a lot, I think.
Yeah, really.
Anyways. So the iPad Mini's coming, which will only
exacerbate our internet problem.
Yeah, exactly. I predict it. Especially if I decide to, I can't wait for Amazon production times to catch up and the price point is near enough. I might get a little bit.
So do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So everybody get excited. Brace yourselves. I made a purchase and I like never make purchases ever.
It's a big deal.
Instead of buying an Apple product, which I haven't yet, actually, at all. I'm like the worst Apple fanboy ever.
I told you, you're a closet Android fanboy.
It's true. I decided to jump onto the e-reader bandwagon about 5 years late, but they finally got to the point that I don't know why I'm so stupid excited about the fact that it's like high contrast screens. It's a white on black with the Kindle Paperwhite. So October 2nd, they started shipping October 1st. I was excited. I couldn't stand it. I figured if I didn't like it, I could always return it because they got great return policies. So I ordered it. I threw down my money. I was like, this is it. I'm getting the Paperwhite. I'm ready to order some books. I'm super excited. November 5th is my ship date. November 5th.
November 5th.
November 5th.
Like 29 days from now.
Yes. I check like 3 times a day to see if that's been updated. And wow. It doesn't update. It just stays. I don't know if I can wait that long. I don't actually know how to wait that long.
So do you think it's just that popular, or they didn't make enough of them?
I think it was a combination of both. I think
I guess.
I think they really expected the the Kindle Fire HD to be this like huge blowout sale. Everybody's going to go, because you go into any store and it's on the shelves. It's shipped the same day as the Paperwhite. Stores still don't even know what a Paperwhite is. Like, they haven't even gotten promotional details on it. And just for whatever reason, everybody's like, it's unclear what happened, why everybody feels the same way I do, which is, wow, this is like what I've been waiting for. This is what I want. It, like, is that magic blend? And I think they just expected it to not sell huge numbers.
Wow.
They'd have some ramp up time to get to Christmas. And then just they got inundated with, you know, a flood of people who want one. And
I'll be honest. I mean, I looked at it and I was like, dude, that's pretty cool. If I were to get a Kindle, that's the one I would get, because I wouldn't waste my money on a Fire. And yeah, and then I was telling my wife about it, and she was like, oh, man, she considered getting one, except she likes to borrow books from friends in a library, which is free, and it's harder to do with a Kindle.
Yeah, whereas I actually buy books, so it's, yeah. But and I read books, and I carry books with me all the time. I got so impatient. I'll tell you this. This is awful. I got so impatient, James. I downloaded the Kindle app for my iPod Touch and bought a book. So I can start reading, because I was like, yesterday I was talking about, I really want to read Do Androids Dream of Electronic Sheep? Because I've never seen the original version of Blade Runner with the commentary that actually explains what's going on, the narration. I've only seen the director's cut, and I'm so confused. So I decided maybe I should just read the book so I can understand what's going on. And actually, our uncle, with his 70-inch plasma TV, he has the DVD of the original. So I'm just trying to figure out a time where we can go hang out with him, man. But anyways, I decided to read it, but I couldn't wait till the end of the month. So I got the book and was like, it's transferable. This totally makes sense. So I was like,
totally
sitting there on my iPod Touch reading, thinking, this would be so much cooler if I had my Kindle Paperwhite.
You know, I'll admit, though, I like reading on my iPhone, because you flip the pages a lot, so you really feel like you're making progress.
Yeah, it's true. It's so true. It takes like 10 seconds to get through a page. Oh, this is great. Like, yeah. get the font size a little bit bigger. But all this might be moot if they come out with a $200 iPod mini or iPad mini next, you know, week and a half from now, and just be like, well, maybe I'm making the wrong decision here. I don't know.
How much is the Paperwhite?
It's $120. It's extra $20 to get it without advertising.
Is that what you did?
And then, yeah.
That's fine. I don't care.
I thought about it for a while, and I was like, I could probably put up with the advertising, but it wasn't clear if you could get rid of it later, and I just don't want to, like, I know I'll get tired of it eventually, and eventually, like, a year from now, it'll be like, it's $20. Why do I put up for this for $20? You know, and, which I would just sit there and go, why put up with it for a year for $20? So, and I could afford it, so I was like, yeah, I'll get rid of it. But, Now we're like, yeah, and then you include taxes and whatnot. It's like $150 out the door. Free shipping, though, which is pretty nice. I like that. Pretty good about that kind
That's
of stuff.
That's cool. $150. Okay. I'm just thinking in terms of, you know, if that mini comes along, how...
It's not going to be less than the...
Well, I know it's not going to be less, but how close does it have to get for you to...
Nah,
you'll be happy with the Paperwhite, I think.
Yeah, it's, you know, I really will be. I want an iPad. I don't want an iPad mini. I don't want a small tablet. Otherwise, I'd have gotten in a Kindle HD. What I want is the white on black e-ink screen. That's cool to me. That's, you know, I've tried to explain that to people who have, like, all these, like, super cool technologies. They're like, why do you like this? I was like, I like to read. I'm sorry.
I'm still waiting for the color e-ink for photo things. What are those called?
That to me.
Those photo displays.
I'm sure.
All over that.
I'm sure they feel the exact same way about this, but I personally think that I agree. I think that's your holy grail of e-ink technology, and I think that'll come.
Yeah.
Especially with the popularity of this one, because what this proves is that people still get excited about e-ink and when e-ink improvements, you know, that there's a market for that. People want non-backlit, especially because it's like it's got this front lighting thing that they're doing that we talked about, where like They have like all sorts of weird refractory angles so that it can light it up. It's like soft front lighting, but yeah, it's backlight, you know, whatever. And people get super excited about that. I'm excited about that. I can't even express why. Like, it's hard to put it into words why, like,
So I know one of the features that they cut out was the text to speech. How broken up over that are you?
Not at all. It's I didn't even know it came with audio out. I thought Kindle. I forgot that was a feature. So it wasn't until I was like had already ordered mine and was reading reviews and I was like, wait a second.
All right.
Is it supposed to come with that? But for me, it's like I generally don't listen to stuff. I try to listen to books, and I'm not very good at it. I get very distracted very quickly. And I've already got so much like for just listening to talk. I have enough podcasts where it's hard enough to keep up with. So for me, I'd rather just read. If I'm going to read, I want to read. And I don't want my music on it because I don't want to have to keep track of another device and sync all the music and have everything. You know, it's like, it's bad enough, in my opinion, with having a computer and an iPod Touch. Like, that drives me crazy. it's weird. But it's like, you know, trying to keep everything synced, I wouldn't be able to put up with it. So for me, it's preferable to listen to music on my iPod Touch and read on another device. I don't need all in ones like that. So, but a lot of people, nobody seems to be super broke from reviews I've read. No one seems really, really broken up about that. That kind of is the consensus of most people don't use it extensively, that feature, and it's still available on the Kindle Fire HD, which is like an extra $30. You know, if you want the 150, you're like, if you get the cheapest Kindle Fire, it comes with that. So if that's what you want, well, then just get that. That's not what this does. It does just, you know, just reading, and it lasts for like 17 years on one battery charge. So, I like it. I'm excited. Anyways, that kind of got us off topic on a product review that we can't review yet because we haven't actually played with it. Anyways, guess whose birthday it was this week? The certificate of deposit.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know.
Nah, the compact disc turned 30 on Monday.
Holy cow.
Pretty crazy. So, this is sort of classic tech talk that we've never actually talked about on this show, I don't think, but physical media, future or past? I don't know. It's a cool piece of technology. It's you know, obviously most computers are still built with the compact disc, so it's not completely dead, but I think it's well on its way. It served its purpose.
It's, I mean, obviously, I don't know. DVDs and Blu-rays seem to still be around. I don't have them anymore, but I know others do.
I rented a DVD on Friday.
Yeah.
I know. Felt really weird. It had been like not five years, but probably 3 or 4 years since I'd walked into the place where I rent the liquor store.
The liquor store.
It's funny, as a kid, like, I never put together, like, we were renting videos from the liquor store. Like, it just, I didn't
that
even
what
register
we called
that
it.
They had alcohol there. Yeah, I thought that was just where you rent movies.
I was like, saying Safeway.
exactly.
Oh, yeah. Where are you going? Oh, we're going to the liquor store. Yeah, I guess in retrospect, like, that'd be weird, huh? We're
like
10
really
years
is.
Old. We're going to the liquor store.
Especially because, like, it's not like we didn't have Hollywood Video or Blockbuster.
Yeah.
They just had the best deals. They had all the current movies, and, like, nobody went there because it's called the liquor store. It is a liquor store called the liquor store.
That was the name of it, too, huh? That wasn't, like, the short name we gave it.
I know. It's awesome. Like, I went in there today, and, like, or on Friday, and it was like waves of registering. Like, this is really kind of surreal. But the cool part was I walk in, and, like, the lady behind the desk, she's like, oh, it's been forever since you've been here. Like, you know, like, how are you doing? I was like, you remember me? I seriously, like, Like, I think the last time you saw me, I had hair and no beard. Like, really? she totally. But not only did she know me, she knew our address. She could still tell me where we lived, so she was able to put that information. Oh, shoot, we totally didn't return it today. No, we returned it on Saturday. Anyways. but anyway, so we rented the Avengers.
That's right. I saw the Facebook status update from Lisa, and I was totally jealous.
She was sipping chocolate milk because she get her wisdom teeth removed.
Oh, that's right.
But
the Avengers. So, is it still a good movie even on the small screen?
You know, it was about like a third of the way through, and I was like, I don't remember why I liked this movie so much. I mean, like, I like it; it's enjoyable, but. I just don't know. And then all of a sudden, the Hulk showed up. And I was like, I remember why I love this movie.
All right.
It's like the greatest movie ever. I've always been a really big fan of the Hulk. Like, you know, in high school, people would be like, who's your favorite superhero? I was always like, the Hulk. And they're like, what? I was like, well, he's like he's great because he's complicated. He's like this anti-hero.
He's complicated.
Like, this, you know, he gets angry, and his power is anger and raw carnage, and then to see him and Thor go at it, oh, it's just so satisfying. That movie is so dang satisfying with my Incredible Hulk itch that got started back in the day with the Ang Lee version that didn't really scratch the itch so much as it just made it itchier and just more agitated. I just wanted more. It was such a letdown, And then even the last one with Edward Norton, you're like, it's pretty good, it's enjoyable, but it just didn't have any of that, like, I didn't feel any of the conflict. Like, I didn't feel any emotional of the Hulk being angry. And then this one, oh, it's powerful, it's so good. So
the Joss Whedon, that's where it's at.
Yeah, he's so good.
He's my favorite director.
All right. Right now, definitely. Him and
I love that scene where he's trying, or that part where he's trying to lift up Mjolnir, and it's just not working for him.
Yeah, and he could just feel the aircraft carrier ripping apart beneath him. Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
Oh man, they have a special relationship. It's great because it's like the Hulk and Thor are best friends, and Bruce Banner and Edward Stark
Edward Stark? Did I lose you?
Eddard Stark, which is the main character from the Game of Thrones. Now, are you there?
Oh, I'm here. So, who?
Can you hear me, James?
Edward Stark? Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Edward is, it's Eddard Stark from the Game of Thrones. He's the main character. The book / TV series. It's totally a different character. Well, it's like they've got really Tony Stark. That was the wrong characters. Anyways.
That's fair. And I didn't get it because I don't.
Go and watch it.
Watch or read that. But.
Yeah.
All right.
Those are solidly R-rated TV show.
I almost had the opportunity to go watch The Avengers with a guy who hadn't seen it yet. And unfortunately, I was busy. And I really, really, really considered backing out of my prior commitment. just so I could like watch him watch the movie.
Yeah.
Because he's a big superhero fan, but he's got a little kid, so he can't actually go to the movie theaters much. And so, and he's got the home theater setup, like the screen that pulls down with the surround sounds and the Blu-ray, and he's got like the big curtains to go over the window so it gets dark. It's an awesome setup, which I get it, right? If he's not going to go to the movie theaters, he invested in his home so he can stay home with his kids and watch awesome movies on an awesome setup, which is cool. And I just wanted to be there. I was like, oh. I'd be like looking over at him, have like a sore neck by the time it's done.
Yeah.
Of course, he'd probably get annoyed because like I know a good part's coming and I'd turn to him before it happens so I could watch his reaction.
Yeah.
Like, stop it,
Yeah.
you're ruining it. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
I'll just look at
You're
you.
giving it away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, this
Okay.
part's
I'm just
awesome.
gonna
What do you
look at
think?
you then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just like, what?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah.
It's good.
But I
It's
didn't,
good.
so I didn't get to do that.
Oh,
So,
that's sad.
cool story that could have been. Oh,
Yeah.
well.
Anyway, so hey, I wanted to give you an update on this kind of cool story we talked about a couple weeks ago.
All right.
So do you remember me talking about them printing off guns with 3D printers?
Yes.
Yeah, so the big deal there was like a gun is defined as the carriage. It's just that one component, not the trigger, not the barrel, not everything else, because those are all, with the whole advent of the interchangeable parts, pretty much there's only one part that actually gets the serial number. That's the main carriage. And some dude decided, I wonder if you could print one of those off in a 3D printer. And because the carriage doesn't actually, it just houses everything. It doesn't actually take the brunt of the impact. Once you like put everything else on the handle
Yeah.
the springs and everything, you have a fully functional gun. Works really well, and so it kind of opened up this whole new like, oh hey, what do we do about this? Because you can
Yeah,
print
really.
off unregistered guns. And so this dude wanted to like get into not necessarily manufacturing guns, but he wanted to get a 3D printer and allow people to use the 3D printer and his models to manufacture their own guns. which was kind of this like weird area, but it got a lot of media attention. So the guys, it turns out that the dudes that he didn't buy the 3D printer outright. He leased it, and the guys that he leased it from, when they found out what he was planning on doing with it, they decided that like, we're talking about this like it's exciting because it's like, you're pushing the
Yeah.
controversy forward. We're gonna figure out, we're gonna have to start resolving issues. Well, these people, they decided that they didn't want their 3D printer being in the middle of that, so they revoked the lease and they showed up with like armed guards and took the
Whoa.
3D printer back. It's like, well, okay, I guess. And so he went to the Department of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the ATF, in his location. Can't remember what state that is. It's not. Yeah, the Austin, Texas branch. Of course, this is happening on Austin, Texas. Like, where else could it happen? But
Arizona.
Yeah, I guess a good point. but he so anyways, this dude, I guess he'd actually like contacted the federal ATF,
Whoa.
and basically asked them like, hey, we're not manufacturing them, can we do this? And the federal ATF was like, yeah, as long as you're not selling them. And he was like, cool, we're not selling them, we're not selling them. And
Don't worry
technically,
about it.
yeah. And so the federal government was like, okay, cool. Well, he finally went and talked to the Texas ATF, and they were like, I think you're selling them. You might want to. And so like they basically told him like, look, you haven't done anything illegal yet, and there are ways to do this legally, but basically is to register as a gun manufacturer, which is what he was trying to avoid doing.
Yeah, that
So
sounds
he's
like a
kind of bummed
pain.
about it. Yeah, and that's what makes it, that's what makes it expensive, basically, is becoming a registered gun manufacturer. Up until this point, he wasn't. And he said he's probably still going to try to pursue it, but kind of it's kind of fun when the practicalities of can we do this move way faster than the legalities of
Yeah.
it. And we were like on a collision course for, is this legal? And it totally killed my fun.
Yeah, 'cause you were just
But
waiting to go out and create some guns, huh?
well, that's you don't no, not necessarily. My boss has been talking about buying a 3D printer for a couple, well, pretty much since I started working there, which that'd be kind of, I'm just saying, I'm not opposed to the idea of it, but but really, I just thought it would be interesting to talk about. And but kind of in a
you know, one of the
topic.
Perks of working for a huge tech company is I do have access to a 3D printer. The only problem is I have to know how to program it, if that makes sense. You know, write the software or whatever to print, or not write the software, but there's specific software it uses in order to print from it. You know what I mean? And
yeah, basically what happens is you model it in either SolidWorks or AutoCAD, and then you have a translation program that basically turns it into a printable file.
So I don't know either of those, and so that creates kind of a problem for me. But theoretically, if I took the time to learn it, I could send print jobs to this printer.
Dude, I totally know how to do all of that.
Well, if you got an idea, we can make it happen. Just saying. One of the perks of working for a big tech company.
We're going to have to talk about this offline. So I have ideas.
All right.
That's exciting. That's cool. Yeah, so I'm totally distracted. I got to, okay, clear my mind here, because now I'm like thinking about all the things that I've been wanting to make for a while and trying to stay focused.
They actually have like they've got three of them. They've got the sand and glue one, you know, which isn't very strong, but it does that. They have the which is cool because you can make like you can print impossible objects, or whatever, because you can. And then they have the one that does the rings, and slowly builds it up. A little bit at a time, depending on what it is. And then they have a third one. I don't remember which one it is, but it's another, you know, it's plastic.
Yeah.
I got some cool salt shakers made from the printer.
That's awesome. Yeah, those impossible shape ones are pretty fun because you can build, like, super complex gear systems that aren't necessarily impossible to build, but they're, like, nobody's ever built them before, and then you can print them off in like 5 minutes. They're great.
These are designed for technically it's to make prototypes of like printer circuit boards and pieces so they can really quickly iterate
on
them.
I didn't even think about that. Oh, man. I'm excited now. But this is kind of a bigger picture question that kind of comes up with all this, not just you bragging about how awesome your job is.
It's true.
We'll
bash it later.
Yeah. One of the big things that comes up, you know, with all of this, is it's like, you know, we've been talking, the classic adage of the piracy is like, you know, you wouldn't steal a car, so why would you steal a movie? To which everybody goes, because it's not stealing, it's duplication, it's different.
Yeah.
And not to mention, most people are like, if I could download a car,
I would
download a car. and you know, a car is a little bit of a big, you know, big thing here. But it is an interesting question of if you could download a, you know, something that somebody the design for something that somebody else has designed and made, would you? And the practicalities of this one's really weird. What happens if you go, well, it's a relatively simple thing to, you know, like some artists make some beautiful sculpture, and then you get your little Catch 1-2-3 program out, which if any of you ever used AutoCAD Catch 1-2-3, it's awesome. You take a bunch of pictures. They have an iPhone app now. You just take a bunch of pictures and then upload it, and it returns a 3D solid model.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, and you can, like, take that, and then you can just print that out. You can replicate it. You know, perfect replications of just taking pictures. You know, it's you sit there and you go, like, it's in this article I was reading. It's Bab or The Economist talking about the idea of, you know, of copyright in the physical world. You know, it's this weirdly weird idea, and that people are like, you know, people are worried about, frankly, because they, you know, they. You know, a lot of times, you know, the value of a car isn't only the material it's made out of. The value of the car is partly, largely in the design, you know?
Yeah.
Because that much scrap metal is not worth pennies, but when it's all put together and, you know, it's well engineered, you know, you have a drivable vehicle. And that's worth, that can be worth a tremendous amount. I don't know. They were getting into like different things that have already come up. Like this one dude figured out how to make this. Have you seen those impossible triangles? I can't remember what they're called, but they're it's the Penrose triangle. It's basically these like impossible shapes. Okay. That they have like where if you've traced them, they only have one side. But they look 3D. Well, this guy figured out how to manufacture one.
Wow.
And he was like challenging people to figure out how to do it. Well, somebody else figured out how to do the exact same thing, and then he uploaded his file on
yes!
how to do it online. And the guy who made the original one was like, "Hey, it's unfair." And so he actually tried to file a lawsuit to do a Digital Millennium Copyright Act takedown. It was on Thingiverse was the website where it was uploaded, and Thingiverse came back and were like, "Dude, a Penrose was designed in the 1930s by a Swedish artist. You can't copyright that." But it's an interesting question. Like,
yeah.
This is what's crazy about all of this is like so far everything has just been like all of these issues have been resolved by sidestepping them. Nothing. Now, every time it gets to the point where it's like you might actually have to deal with the idea of, you know, where does copyright, where does industrial, you know, design patents, where does one end and one begin, where, you know, what is the actual value of an object? Is it its design or is it its the raw materials or is it the work that was done to it? You know, like where do all these things happen? And I don't know. It's interesting that already, especially with like low cost 3D printers, there's this big campaign, and one of the things this talks about is it's like it was a policy paper talking about the idea of the future of 3D printers and how basically they're going to be branded as piracy machines. They're going to be branded as like this like horrible, you know, like this is what evil people who want to destroy the world use because you know, in a large degree, you know, somebody pointed out obviously like the obvious example is, you know, 3D printers are going to destroy manufacturing just like printing destroyed, you know, book publishers. There are certain types of manufacturing that will always be preferable in, you know, mass production type things. You know, anytime you have mass production, you have economy of scales, you work efficiencies, those things will always be around. But obviously the printers, home printers, took away certain people's business. The scribes aren't happy about it. It's just an interesting question to me. Like, I don't know. What are we going to do as a society when we, you know? Because I think ultimately, one-off printing gets good enough. It's like, you know, if you look at printing nowadays, most, you know, there's still large run publishing for hardbacks, but Amazon has one of the biggest farms of one-off printing for soft, you know, for softback books, and they try to not store anything paperback. They try to only print one-offs,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, you know, which to me is, you know, well, there's that's still different because it's an industrial level, but the point is that it's still getting to, well, there might be a place, we might someday replace smelting factories or tooling factories with metal printers, you know, and there's no...
Oh, interesting, okay.
There's no practical reason to think that between CNC machines, highly, you know, actuated robotic arms, and the ability to do additive welding and stuff, there's no reason to think that through a number of processes, we can't build really expensive printers, manufacturers, that basically do the whole thing and do it in an additive way that doesn't have the same amount of waste. You know, it's like the biggest thing, like, Apple's really proud of the fact that all of their, you know, all of their stuff has aluminum in it. The problem with aluminum is they start with aluminum blocks, and then they subtract stuff. Whereas if you could just add what you needed, and you know, as you're like, and then just take off 1 or 2% to give it a nice finish,
yeah,
that's a completely different you know, economic model, that actually makes sense to some people. That will make sense in a lot of manufacturing areas. And if you can get to the point where you can almost interchangeably print plastic and metal, you know, at some point, pretty much all that's left for human beings to do outside of that is wood. And, you know, and that'll just be for decoration. You know, and I don't know. I see that, like, yeah, and I think these things will develop slower than computer technology. It's not like in 30 years you'll be printing off cups of coffee. But I think realistically in the next 50 or 60 years, you could see a lot of small-scale manufacturing. So not cars, not houses, but, like, computers and stuff like that just being – you know, popped off one at a time on these things. You know, you can have high levels of customization. And houses, people, especially hobbyists, owning these things, I think will be really common. You know, they'll be common tools in high schools. And, you know, like you would see in a wood shop or a metal shop, you know, they'll have a 3D printer. And I think, you know, businesses will start to find reasons to use them. It's like one of the reasons why my boss wants us to buy one. Is to be able to print off small scale versions of our systems. So you design the entire system, you get this one file, you load it into this, you know, you turn it into a printable file, and then you print it out. And then literally my boss can walk into a meeting with potential clients and sit down, this is what we designed for you, this is how it will work, this is where all this goes.
Yeah.
And man, that could be, you know, and that sort of thing, that's powerful. That has, you know, that can change what you do. And really, once you have the printer, that's not a very expensive leap to go, you know, to get to the point where you use that all the time. Well, this is what we're designing for you. We're going to try to see and make sure it all works and fits together on a small scale. And
you know, I think Lego uses those printers quite frequently to make temporary Lego blocks for their designs.
I believe it. That's awesome. I'd love to work for Lego.
You'd have to move to another country, just so you know.
I know. That's the biggest reason why I won't. But the thing is, and the language. You got to learn another language. How to say play in where are they? Norway? No.
Yeah, something.
I know how to say play.
They're over there.
Yeah. But it's just, you know, it's Lego. what was I going to say? But see, it's like the thing is that you're sitting here, and this is what's going to happen. You're sitting here saying, yeah, I have access to these printers. Like, you're an analyst, you don't have anything to do with it, but you can do it, you can use it because the company has access to it. And that's what's going to happen is as these things become more prevalent, it's going to be like printing, like buying Xerox scanners at work, where like, yeah, I can use the big printing machine because I'm at work and we have extra paper and the cost is negligible and my boss lets me do it. And then all of a sudden you'll have these really small scale ones at home. And that sort of thing will become more and more prevalent, I think, as time goes on, in much the same way that printers have kind of had that, I don't think it'll ever be at the same scale that printers are, just because I don't think there's as many use cases, but I think that they'll be really common. I think you'll see them in – somebody in your neighborhood will have one. It'll be like any good tool. You know, it'll be another tool in a lot of people's tool sets. You know,
interesting.
Construction companies will all have them. So the question becomes, you know, once you have them and they're prevalent, you know, how do you regulate them? How do you – you know – where is the value of something? You know, we always come back to this idea of it was never a big deal with, like, you never worried about people copying books because in order to have an effect, let's say somebody wants to steal your story and publish it on their own, they can publish a couple of books and they can make a little bit of money, but it's not going to have any big effect on you, so you don't worry about it. It's not until you get to somebody who actually has the ability to do a large run of books and they compete against you, in which case it's an easy target to go after because they're big and they have money. But as soon as
I think you're going to have the same problems that piracy you know, they currently have with downloads, I think you're going to have the exact same issues. And currently there is no great solution for that. It's a game of cat and mouse, really.
Yeah.
And the mice really, are winning.
And the, and the best solution so far that's been come up with is offer it so that it offer your content so it's so easy and at such a low price that it competes with free, you know, which is the whole iTunes you know strategy. It's make it ridiculously easy for people, whereas pirating music and loading it into your player and loading it on your iPad, well, that's hard. It's so difficult. That's not worth 99 cents to me. It's worth 99 cents to just hit one button, type in a password, and now it's up. It's synced onto all my devices and lasts forever. And that's what we want. That's what everybody wants. And I think that, you know, I think it's one of those things where, you know, I don't know.
Someday in the future, it'll be there.
Yeah, well, the crazy part is that it's like we keep getting these exciting almost experiences. Like, it's almost coming to a head. It's almost, you know, something to you know, it's going to be a problem. We're going to start figuring out solutions. How are we going to move forward? And what's really weird is, like, I was reading articles of, like, I guess the Supreme Court is going to talk about, you know, the ideas of, you know, once you buy a car, you know, can you resell that? Or can you be forced into a license where you're not allowed to resell it, like with a, you know, like you have with digital music, where you're not legally allowed to gift that to another person or sell it to another person? And is that something that we can, you know, we as a society, our manufacturers going to want to get to the point where, especially with durable goods, where they're like, because that's effectively what digital content is, right? It's a perfectly durable good, you know, and they hate the idea of that because there's no reason to go back and buy from them. And so if it works for music, why can't the car industry do that? Why can't they say, no, you're not allowed to to sell our copyrighted material. You're only able to license the use of it for the lifetime of you owning it, you know, which is like, it's, you know, it's a crazy question, but those are the questions we're asking. And not just, you know, and the cool part about cars is that, like, it's always used as, like, your extreme case, but it keeps coming up as a, no, we're actually dealing with this stuff. I love it. I don't know. And I still think ultimately we're going to have it's all going to come to a head and we're going to have a big changing of how we deal with copyright in America. But this push comes to shove. Either we'll do it because we're thoughtful and, you know, we look ahead and we know that this is coming and smart people get together and make reasonable decisions, or it's going to happen because the population gets so bent out of shape that it absolutely has to happen, and then we'll make the worst possible decisions that we can because we have to make them in a hurry and nothing but emotion will get through. I love our government.
That note, I'm going to change it up on you.
Yeah. All right, cool.
We're just going to go a totally, totally, totally different route. Okay?
All right.
So here's my question.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
Have you seen the latest Facebook ad?
No, I have not.
Okay. So imagine a picture of a chair, okay?
Okay.
Let's see here. Kids playing on. Oh.
Chairs are made so that people can sit down and take a break. Anyone can sit on a chair.
Yep.
And if the chair is large enough, they can sit down together.
It's true.
And tell jokes, or make up stories, or just listen. Chairs are for people. And that is why chairs are like Facebook.
But you didn't know that.
Doorbells, airplanes, bridges. These are things people use to get together, so they can open up and connect about ideas and music. and other things that people share. Dance floors, basketball. A great nation. A great nation is something people build so they can have a place where they belong. The universe. It is vast and dark and makes us wonder if we are alone. So maybe the reason we make all of these things is to remind ourselves that we are not.
Facebook.
Whoa. So was that all like lovey-dovey feely, like emotionally charging? Stay young, stay foolish-esque? Think different?
Yeah, kind of.
Kind of? I don't know. Okay, so now I'm going to have to watch this. I'll probably watch it afterwards. But I'll be honest, it didn't get the tingly, oh man, I'm excited feeling.
Really?
Well, maybe it's just because, like, I've got terrible sound quality on the other side of this. Did you get that feeling? Were you all like, oh yeah, this is, inspires me to make, like, oh. I feel like I'm part of something big.
All right. We had two very different experiences.
Well, I didn't see it, though. The visuals probably had a lot to do with it. We're like, was it like cute kids running around and beautiful people enjoying life? Like, was it that sort of a thing?
Yeah.
That always makes it more emotionally impactful. Very, very diverse people. You know, they all look different. Remember haircuts, skin color, eye color.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it was accents. A classic college brochure.
Oh, man. Yeah, okay, that helps. All right, I got to watch it. Shoot, I wish my internet weren't so slow right now, or I'd just hop on. This is why I need Google Fiber. Speaking of Google Fiber, that's a dang good commercial.
So it starts off with a chair, as you heard, and
yes,
kids playing on it, and then it's kind of the way it worked is they would show you some images and then they would tell you what you just saw. And kind of, you know, this idea of you're just connecting with everybody, and so they showed a bunch of pictures of or video of people connecting in different ways. You know, there's a billion users on Facebook now, so, you know, that's a lot of connections.
I know, that's an unbelievable huge number. That's cool. You know, I don't care what everybody says. I like Facebook. It's a cool thing. I mean, it's a cool service. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. It's, you know, they might be the evil empire come to steal all your identities and sell all your information, but think about what you can do with that thing. It's unbelievable. That's crazy, man.
Yeah, no, I understand. I use it. I'm play games on it, I'll admit. I don't spend money, but I spend play games.
I mean, I wouldn't spend a dime on it, but
You're not going to give a real gift to somebody on their birthday?
Oh, yeah, I saw that they did that. I was like, oh, man, they were sort of listening to us,
yeah.
Obviously.
Clearly.
Not quite as good an idea, but close. Same ballpark, at least.
Yeah.
Man. I might give a real gift to somebody, and by that I mean I'll buy them a real gift and then I'll give it to them or mail it to them. I probably won't buy it through Facebook. But it's what's so great about the micro purchase transactions that you can do it. It's like, you know, you can help buy. Oh, jeez. That's such a better idea.
I know. Facebook. They missed the boat. Oh, well. It's not too late. Yeah. They could do both. They could do both.
It's true. It's true. Come on, Mark. We know you listen.
Yeah, I know you're a fan. So that's their TV ad. I mean, it's not as bad as, say, a certain company's recent music video. It's not that at all.
Oh my gosh. No, well, it sounded cool. I mean, it's actually, I'll be honest, when it got to, like, sometimes, you know, you share stories, you make up stuff, and sometimes you just listen. And it's funny. If I had to describe what I do on Facebook, that actually is what I probably do most of the time.
You make up stuff?
I listen.
Oh.
Yes. Dang it. You called me out. No, but like most of the time I would say I listen. It's like being part of a big party and just seeing what all your friends are doing. And you know, it's like I probably once or twice a day will just go through the first, couple pages of news stories, and sometimes I'll click on people and then find out that friends that I had in middle school are married to people that were friends with mine during high school. And I'm like, my mind blows. I was like, I didn't know you guys knew each other. Like, totally different districts and everything. Like, what the heck?
All right.
Obviously, that one happened this last week.
More disclosures.
But that happens, it's this kind of stuff happens to me all the time. Where you're just like, man, it's cool. It's actually really cool because it's like, you're able to keep up with your friends without actually talking. No. Well, it's funny because it's like, the thing is that I don't use Facebook as a replacement for social interaction. At least personally, but I find that I'm more up to date with, tons of friends that I used to have, have friendships with or casual acquaintances with. Like, whoa, that's crazy. They're doing that. Or, and I think Facebook has figured out that I don't like the politics of any of my friends because it doesn't share any politics with me, which is great.
Nice.
I really like that. I appreciate that. That I get a little bit of politics. I'm looking at you, Brian. But
I get that one too.
Yeah. But for the most part, I don't get any politics on Facebook, which is really helps keep me balanced. especially during the silly season. I love politics, but I don't like talking to people about politics.
I understand.
But I don't know, it's cool. It's funny. This is like, man, you could tell I'm in a good mood today. So I'm like euphoric. Oh man, it's cool technology. That's so exciting. I gotta check out this commercial. So, yeah. Did you see my? Did you see that we saw as far as we can ever see? Last week.
I did not. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So the Hubble Telescope.
Is there a picture of it?
Pretty exciting. Yeah, it's like the lamest picture ever. It's a super small picture. They didn't have the high res picture.
Well, that's
Hubble
dumb.
Picture took a 2 million second or exposure, which is not 23 continuous days, but it's a bunch of exposures that when you add all the time together equals 23 days.
Oh, so that's a 2 million exposure, you said?
Yes.
Oh,
2 million second exposure.
Oh, at first I thought it was like, I didn't know you wrote 2M, and I was like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
2 million second exposure.
Yeah. So it wasn't a continuous, but this is the thing. It wasn't continuous, but it equates to the number of pictures that they all piled on top of each other. It equates to about 2 million seconds. And what's nuts about it is they did a bunch of calculations, and they were basically like, so the black space behind it, there's like nothing beyond that.
Really?
And they were saying that, or they were saying anything beyond that in the black space is in the infrared range. It's so redshifted because it's moving so fast from us that we can't see it in our visible spectrum, which the Hubble only sees in our visual spectrum, which is ironic since Hubble's famous for basically like figuring out how the whole redshift thing happens.
Wait, what's the redshift thing? I don't know what that is.
So this is the cool experiment that they always show you is in physics class is you've got the fire truck that's coming at you and it sounds one way and as soon as it's passing you and as soon as it passes you, the tone changes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what that is called, it's a redshift and blue shift. Basically what happens is as it's approaching you, because it's moving towards you, you're basically getting a higher frequency.
Okay.
Than when it passes you, you get a lower frequency. Well, the redshift is that literally with light, where as things are moving away from you, it shifts into the red spectrum. And if it's going fast enough and it's far enough, it shifts so far into the red light spectrum that it actually becomes infrared. And it's no longer visible to the human eye.
Okay.
And so we've literally seen as far as you can possibly see with in the human spectrum. Nice job, NASA. We're done. Dust our hands off, go home. they actually have another satellite out there that can see that can see infrared and see further, quote unquote further, can see more, but it's right now it's under threat of being cut in the federal spending. Congress doesn't get as excited about telescopes that everyone doesn't know the name of.
So this is just a small little snapshot, right? It's not like a 360 or whatever.
Oh, no. Yeah, this is like this probably to the point where they've talked about the deep field pictures before, and they're unbelievably tiny. All of the light in that picture, if you click on the link and you see all those stars and everything,
yeah,
that's literally invisible to, if you're like in a spaceship out in outer space, you can't see that. It's so tiny and so far off, it's like not visible.
Wow.
And
how far away is it? It's
at the edge of the universe, man.
Okay.
It's far.
That sounds pretty
cool. It's 13.2 billion light years away.
Oh, that's pretty far.
Yeah, it's a good distance. Yeah. That's crazy.
That is crazy. Huh. Cool. Way to go.
I know. Nice job, NASA. Let's do some more. Yeah, they get me. They're cool. They're awesome.
let's do this.
Let's do it. I want to hear it.
So I work for Hewlett Packard.
Mm-hmm.
I don't represent them.
You don't represent them, yeah.
It's important that I remind us all of that. So on Wednesday, HP had a little event where they met with they had what's called a securities analyst meeting. They meet with analysts over securities. I don't know.
When you say securities, like
stocks.
What are you talking about? Okay.
Stock analysts, basically.
Okay.
The market, the street, as we call them inside HP.
that's the Wall Street, right?
yeah, those guys.
Okay.
Those guys who you should never run your business thinking about them, but we do. So, there you go. HP set out, had a meeting, which I think HP's required to have those meetings. And how much you say and what you say is not necessarily, dictated, but HP decided to share a lot. Miss Meg Whitman, who, by the way, I'm best friends with.
Meg Whitman?
I have a picture of her and I together here. Just real quick, just to prove that I'm awesome. I wonder where that one would be. Here, okay, we'll go to Faces, and my name is James. Go! All the way to the bottom. Ready? Yes. Here we go. There it is.
Oh man, Meg Whitman.
Meg
James
and I hanging
Furlow.
Out. Yeah. BFFs, even if
she's
not. That's
crazy. Founder of eBay. She didn't found eBay.
She's not the founder, but she ran it for a while.
She just made it big.
She's the CEO of a very large company. Anyways. They had a little meeting where she described some of the things that HP was going through and some of the transformations that it was going to take. And, very much said that there's been a lot of change in the HP leadership in recent years. She's like, yep. And she says that has caused some turmoil because they all have different goals and strategies. And as a result, you get situations where, say, like a Mark Hurd will buy a handset company. And then you have someone like Leo come in and kill said handset company. And then you have someone like...
One of those two made a good decision.
Yeah. And then you have, well, who also, he bought a software company, a large one. And then Meg comes in and goes, so we should have been in the handset company, and that software acquisition's not really paying off. Which you're like, okay, what does that mean? So she set out this plan where basically she said, which we've talked about it before, HP's investing in R&D, and eventually that's going to lead to awesomeness.
Okay? Yeah, that's how you do it.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things that she added, though, was a little bit of a timeline.
Okay.
So, you ready for this?
I am ready. I'm excited.
All right. It's going to take a little while. Okay?
Okay. You know what? I'm all right with that.
Okay. Well, I hope so, because HP is expected to see declines in revenues across all of their divisions for the year of 2013.
All right, that's not good news, but okay.
But here's the good news, is that in 2014, HP will start to see some of the benefits of all that work put in the previous year.
Okay.
And finally, in 2015, HP will return to profitability.
Oh, man. That is a long time for...
Yeah.
One
good.
Of US biggest.
Yep. The Street, the security analysts, they voted by dropping the price of HP stock by a little over 10% that day.
Woo.
Yeah, it hurt. Woo. Thankfully I technically do own stock, so I should probably disclose that, but that's because they were given to me, not because I wanted them. Or how do I want to say that? I didn't buy them. They were given to me.
That was a little bit, probably a little too much disclosure.
No. I'm saying I didn't. I'm trying to say I didn't buy them. They were, you know, whatever. So anyways, yeah, I saw that and we're like, ah, it's awesome. Yeah. I can't sell them until 2014 anyway. So then I might as well hold on to them for a year, right? And,
right.
See how that goes. So,
well,
yeah.
The reality of it is, in my opinion, the reality of it is HP's not going anywhere. You know, you're not, HP is not like Nokia or RIM, and, you know, where it's like you guys are struggling to get by. No, you're still, you know, the lead in a couple of different major markets. The thing is about it, and the reason why I like talking about HP is not because it's like, it's such a doomsday. Oh, you know, I don't get excited about HP because, you know, it's fun to watch companies collapse like it is with others. I'm interested in it because they're such a big player in so many, you know, in so much of so many marketplaces, really, that when they say, hey, look, we don't think things are going to be good for 2 years, you're like, wait a second, you guys are like the number one sellers of PCs and printers, and, you know, and you guys sell unbelievable numbers of servers, and if you don't think it's going to be good for the next 2-3 years, what are you saying about the world economy for the next 2-3 years?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting, that's part of it. Let's see here, what is... So HP's revenue, can I get an annual number here, please? HP's revenue last year was $127 billion.
Woo! That's a lot of money.
Okay, and then when it was all said and done, they got to keep $7 billion of it. Okay? So...
That's not... less than 10%.
A little less than, yeah.
Significantly less than 10%.
It's not
which,
a lot.
You know, but you're a hardware company. Walmart does like $1 trillion in business, and they get to keep like 15 at the end of the year. So it's, you know, it's not horrible. It's just you're also a high tech company, and high-tech companies usually have better margins.
I guess it's all that to say that HP does make a ton of sales and sells a ridiculous number of things. We just don't keep the money, I guess.
Yeah.
It goes towards other things, which, let's see here. If we think about our... If you go to... how do I want to... If you go to the operating income, which what I want to see... so that's going to count... What I'm trying to figure out is if they have... And I don't see like a cost of goods, because that would be the... Because it says total operating expense is like $117 billion, which makes it for $9.6 billion kind of left over, and then you got some tax and stuff. But it's hard to see. So like gross profit, maybe that's the one I want. Yeah. See, gross profit is $29 billion. So in order to just to make the things, so once again, the revenue was $127. It cost $97 billion just to make them.
That's what I'm saying, you know. It's not like you're, you know, it's not like that's... When you're talking about hardware companies, Apple is not just an outlier. They're the extremely weird and rare, unbelievable outlier in that their profit margins are so dang high. And obviously it works for them as a company because of that. Whereas HP is a much more traditional manufacturer producer,
yeah,
where it's the margins are way lower because you're talking about they're building commodities. The thing is that I think a good economy will make up for an awful lot, you know. you know, prices, margins get better during good economies and they get worse during bad economies. And so I think, you know, and this would be my question to Meg Whitman, and, you know, it would be interesting to see what she has to say, but it's like, okay, so you're gonna do a bunch of R&D, you're gonna try to come up with a handset market, you know, a handset, but if you're talking about a commodity manufacturer, that's what HP does. What is it about a new R&D product that's going to make you crazy profitable again? You know, why aren't you going to be, especially in something that's as mature as the handset market? You know, it's not, you know, I think it's clearly not a mature market, but it's maturing. It's getting close. So it's like, why would HP... Why does she expect a new handset, a mobile device, to come in and be this new thing that where it's not just a race to the bottom to compete with Android?
Unless they join Android's team, you know, and then it's competing against Samsung or others.
In which case, it's still a race to the bottom, you know, in large degree. You know, one of the big reasons why the Samsung 3GS is selling as well as it is because they've got killer deals for it, you know. It's still a race to the bottom.
Yeah.
And so I guess my question is what are you guys going to do – sorry, what is HP going to do in the next 3 years that means that you don't have to race to the bottom? Where are you going to get ahead? And I guess that's the question, right? That's the thing is you're expecting to – we're going to get ahead of everybody in some area by such large degrees that we can justify, you know, the nutty insane – profit margins, when I think the truth is, in Meg Whitman's opinion, and if I guess, you know, if I had to be, the reason why she's setting a 3-year game plan and setting expectations so low is because I think she believes that in 4 years the economy will have improved enough that every department will be more profitable because margins will start to open up again, and you'll still be the number one manufacturer of laptops, desktops, printers, and servers, you know. And so if you and then if you have this new breakout market where you got some cool R&D thing that really allows you to, you know, to charge 50% margins and make huge amounts of money, that's just bread and butter on top of it.
Yeah, well, I think it's also going to come from trying to, you know, copy Apple in the integration standpoint, you know, going after this thing we're calling the cloud. And trying to have all the different products and services tied to that, and then you can justify a little higher expense because it's all integrated. Don't worry about it. You know, and that people pay for that convenience, definitely.
That's true.
Another interesting thing, not huge implications, but currently HP has, they got some debt, you know, I mean, it's not like, it's not ridiculous, but a total debt of about $30 billion, okay, from making purchases and stuff like that. HP's current stock price is 14.73. When you multiply that times the number of shares, which is 1.97 billion, HP's market cap, aka the value of the company, is 29 billion. So
less than what you owe.
Yeah, so technically the net value of HP is actually negative right now, which is interesting. Just more in a, it doesn't mean it's going to be taken over or anything like that, but I also think that that's within the realm that of possibility, where all of a sudden you sit there and go, well, so the parts are starting to look more valuable than the whole, as crazy as that sounds. And I don't think Meg wants to sell HP or break it up. I don't think that's in the consideration set until someone comes along with an offer that you can't refuse. But who would want to buy the PC business?
Yeah,
it does not sound like a great business to be in. But yeah, it's, so I think maybe just for that fact alone, HP will be fine to, you know, figure it out. But it's just not in a great place right now. And I think maybe what Meg was trying to do was, or, you know, with everyone at Top knew is, yeah, we got to say these bad things. Let's, instead of slowly bleeding, let's pull the bandaid off. Let's let everybody know what our timeline is, and then let's stick to that timeline. Yes, we're going to take a drop, but then we get to slowly climb back up over the next 3-4 years.
Yeah, and if she can keep her job for the next 6 months,
yep,
they already will. You know, she just gave them the news that could get her fired. So better get it out of the way now than wait for a year to figure out, you know, really and truly, that's what, in the end, that's what got Mark Hurd and Leo and all those, you know, it's the reason why you've gone through 5 CEOs, is because the CEOs didn't stand up and say, hey, this is the really horrible news. Things are bad. They're going to keep getting worse. And there's not really much we can do until we make big investments and just kind of suck it up on the front end. And expect to be better and healthier and go through this beautiful metamorphosis and become a beautiful butterfly on the other side. And Meg Whitman is basically saying, look, we're in full cocoon mode right now. And you know, you just be ready for that. Don't expect anything different, which honestly, if you're a big, you know, if you're a, you know, if you're trying to manage people's retirements because you're part of a big hedge fund, or if you're mutual fund, or if you're just a day trader trying to make a buck, well, yeah, that's a terrible investment, which is why you would drop 10%. But the truth is, I think long term, this is probably the time to buy. I think it's, you know, I personally, my gut feeling is nobody's going to buy HP. Nobody wants to buy HP. Who in the world would buy HP? You know, like, it's not like Nokia where you kind of get this feeling that somebody could buy. Well, but even with Nokia, it's like, I think the reason why Nokia is going to stay around until they bleed completely dry is because there's nobody out there that wants them. I know, it's kind of like RIM. I think the big reason why they haven't been bought yet this year is because it's like everybody keeps asking the question, why would I want you? Like, why? You guys are still – you're not totally dead yet. You're still around. And if you've got these two companies that arguably have value and are extremely cheap and they can't find buyers, I couldn't even begin to imagine who would – you know, pretty much it's Microsoft. Pretty much Microsoft's the only reasonable one out there that you could say would want to buy them. And I think that that would be a nightmare on – that would be as terrible a decision as Time Warner getting together and saying, hey – or no, it's AOL Time Warner. When they all – who was it that got together?
Yeah, AOL and Time Warner.
Yeah, when they – that is the same sort of brilliant idea as someone like Microsoft buying HP. It'd just be horrible. It would be awful. It would be terrible for everybody involved. And so because of that, you got this gigantic company with a humongous amount of momentum. They're still the number one manufacturers of PCs and printers in the world. And they still, you know, the thing is that you've got so much time to bide that it's like, really and truly, you know, maybe 10 years, if nothing changed, it'd be pretty ugly for HP. But the truth is, at this point, I still think you have 10 years before it's like, you know, as long as you keep doing what you've been doing, which is kind of the bare minimum, you can survive for a long time. And if you actually step up to the plate, you get some good innovation going, you make compelling products that allow you to open the margins, mm-hmm. there's no reason why HP can't continue to be a dominant partner with Microsoft and other, you know, and a big time, you know, hardware manufacturer for server farms, you know. Obviously, they're never going to sell to, like, Facebook or Google, but, you know, because they make their own, but... You know, at least, I don't know. I think there's a future for Hewlett-Packard, and not to mention, and this is the simple truth, I think this truth has more value in it than I don't think that a lot of the people who run the big companies right now would want to take on the legacy of Hewlett-Packard. Hmm. It's just such a big company, and it's such a notable worldwide company that nobody would buy it. You might merge with somebody else, but Hewlett-Packard, you know, the titan of the early tech boom, and still the titan today, it's just such a big... That name carries so much weight with it that it, you know, it'd be like the AOL-Time Warner merger where, you know, neither one's going to buy the other.
Right.
You're going to keep those names because they have so much value to them. You know, and yeah, that's, to me, reasonably 5 years, within the next 5 years, if nothing changes at Hewlett-Packard, I could see them come up for a merger with somebody, maybe a big Chinese or Japanese or Taiwanese, you know, manufacturing company. I could see that, but not takeover. That'd be nuts. You know, except I could, you know, maybe Samsung gets a little bit itchy, you know?
Yeah.
We're doing pretty good. We're pretty awesome. What do you guys think?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
So tell me about this information diet.
So this is a pretty cool, I'm going to start this out. So the middle third is all politics. Basically, you know, he has this cool, you know, sits at this, I'm just going to get into it. Basically what he says is that you're eating dessert only. And he came up with this idea that, I know, it's good stuff. But the idea is, and he uses the analogy for health in America. And, you know, this idea that, like, okay, if you only eat dessert, if you only eat sweets, basically you become obese. You become, you know, you have all the terrible health benefits that come with being obese, where you're tired all the time and you're unhealthy and things don't work out because you're eating what tastes best. You're eating what tastes good. You're eating biologically stuff that just takes you in. And it's not just dessert, but it's also, you know, your foods that are bad for you. And, you know, and in a large degree, when you eat a hamburger or get a slice of pizza and have a soda with it, like, really and truly, a soda should be a dessert type thing. It's got the same calories as a piece of cake, you know. And so there's they kind of talk about this, you know, the well-known issue of health in America literally as your diet, and then they draw the analogy to to information you intake. And it starts out with this kind of interesting question. And one of the reasons why this was so poignant is because the type of information that they talk about is particular to this podcast. And so it starts out with this professor goes, "How many people here know the resolution of the new MacBook Pro?" Clay Johnson asked the question earlier this year while speaking to a class in Washington, D.C. 80% of the class knew the answer. It's 288 by 1800. Sorry, 2,880 by 1800. Johnson asked another question. What is the child poverty rate in D.C.? Not one student knew the answer, 29.1%. What's more relevant if you have a $2,000? What's more relevant if you have $2,000 to spend? He asks me. Your laptop works fine. I don't want to pay, or I don't want to lay a guilt trip on you. But somebody should know. Out of a class of 50 people, one person should know the child poverty rate is 29%. And then he kind of goes off in that vein of this idea that, you know, we ingest information in the information age, and it's the sweets, it's the fun stuff. He talks pretty poignantly about tech news and how tech news is kind of taken off as this, like, you know, as the fun information. And he goes, what's even worse about it is that technology journalism today is written by people who don't understand technology. Hey. It basically amounts to advertisements for Apple, Google, Amazon, or Microsoft, which that one hit a little bit close to home. I know technology, and I feel like sometimes it's what our podcasts amount to. You know, but at the same time, and we fully acknowledge at the beginning of our podcast, number one, this is an opinion piece, but number two, we're talking about this soap opera for us. It's interesting in that it's entertainment. It's like following movie stars, but it's, you know, and this is his point, is that basically right now what we have is that he jumps down Reddit's throat, basically being this den of entertainment and and just knee deep information. Whereas, like, when you're actually talking about, you know, amounts of, you know, when you're actually talking about, like, real usable information, there's just people don't know. Another example, he goes, let's bring up a particular incident. Various websites reporting the RIAA demanded $73 trillion from LimeWire. And then he goes, isn't that more money than exists on Earth? and basically, people just went around reporting that like that's, you know, truth. And it's just, you sit there and go, no, that's not truth. That's totally ridiculous because it's such a large amount of money. But people go around reporting it because they don't have any, you know, it's this idea that there's no information, you know, the information out there is not, people don't think about it critically. And so the big takeaway from this, and he applied it to how politics works, but I think it has this broader implication of when you think about the information that you're learning and what you're reading, what you're getting online and everything, you need to really think about it like it were a diet. And this analogy of, like, you can't subside on pizza, beer, soda, and dessert. You really need, you really need a healthy, balanced diet, and certain aspects of your diet literally become addictive, like caffeine or sugar would, where, you know, or, you know, entertainment, you know, the next funny cat picture, where it literally takes over, and it becomes to the point where it's not that you're not ingesting information, and the other, you know, it's the fact that you're taking in the wrong types. And he really directly addresses, and I think I'll probably use this because I think it's pretty brilliant, is he directly attacks the idea of information overload. And he goes, it's not information overload, it's information overconsumption. We don't talk about the idea that a fat person is, they have a food overload. We say they consumed too much food, which, you know, as somebody who's currently working on not being a fat person, that's, you know, yeah, that I agree with that statement. That's the problem. I eat too much. And it's funny when it's like, you know, when, you know, you talk about, like, internet addiction just showed up in, or is going to be in, the new Dictionary of Mental Health Disease, the DMHS. Whatever, that big book where they basically go through all mental health diseases. Internet addiction is well on its way to being part of that and being diagnosable, like gambling addiction or alcohol addiction, not necessarily chemically addiction, but an addiction. And it's interesting that internet addiction, you know, doesn't happen to people who have a healthy information diet where they're reading, you know, political pieces and they're reading about theology and they're reading about, you know, and they're reading about economics and they're reading about the weighty stuff along with, you know, the dessert of, you know, technology and pop news and music. You know, it's, I don't know. It was just a really, you know, for me, I try really hard to go out there and, read a lot more information, know a lot, have it be multidisciplinary what I'm reading. And when I read tech stuff, I try to look for real world implications of how will this affect us? Because I think technology has been good for the world, and I think it's been good for individuals and good for society. So I don't think it's totally useless. And I try to bring articles to the Furlow Bros Tech Podcast that's more than just, you know, Apple's got a new product coming out next week. but I don't know. It was an interesting way. It was a great analogy, I thought. And I definitely, like I said, I definitely am going to be using the idea of we're not information overloaded. We overconsume, and we overconsume on all the wrong garbage. And that is the heart of the problem. You know, you don't blame McDonald's for making you fat. You know, it's the classic argument. Why would I blame, you know, Comedy Central for distracting me too much? I have a choice in what I watch, you know.
Yeah, so this is interesting. I go in cycles, I guess. And I do like his I don't know if it's his last section, but the part where he talks about remedies. Yeah, it's close to the last section. And it's good. I actually read The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss and loved it. It's funny. I had other friends who read it, and they were like, it was lame. There were maybe like a couple tips that I'll never do. And I was like, are you kidding me? There were only a couple things I don't do. We read two totally different books, apparently. So I loved it. And one of his challenges in the book was to go on an information fast. So, I mean, this talks about a diet, right? And in Tim Ferriss, he's like, no, go on a fast for a week. Okay. And I was like, all right, I'm doing it. I'm going on a fast. And the fast definition, super simple, is no news, no videos, no movies, no magazines, like any sort of media, no, right? I mean, pretty straightforward. So that's no Facebook, no Twitter, no Pinterest, didn't exist at the time, but you get the point. No Dig, how about that? and then his other thing was, okay, obviously you can't just get rid of email for a week because, you know, for like jobs and stuff, that's required. But he goes, but instead, limit it down to checking it twice a day for like a half hour each time. Okay. So I did that, and it was amazing. The very first day, it was like on a Monday or something, you know, I got to that chapter and I was like, okay, I'm doing it. And I remember my wife got home. Yeah, we were married. My wife got home, and I was sitting on the couch just like zoned out doing nothing. And she was like, what are you doing? It's like, nothing. I'm on an information fast. She was like, you're weird. It's like, well, yeah, I know. And I explained to her what I was doing, and, you know, I read the book and I'm trying to do it. And she was like, all right, man, good luck with that. So that was what I did. And for the first couple days, I mean, I'd get home and be like, so, not doing anything right now. Just, all right, go take a nap, I guess. I don't know.
take a nap.
But by the end of the week, it was awesome. I remember it was like on that Friday, I was doing some work, and one of my coworkers came over to ask me a question, and she genuinely startled me. And that was where I suddenly realized that, like, I was actually working hard.
Yeah.
I wasn't being distracted every half second by, you know, an email or a tweet. You know, I was actually focused, and she broke my concentration. Normally I'm not focused, and so when someone comes over, it's not a big deal. And for me, that was kind of an aha moment where you went, whoa, okay, maybe there is something to this. And so I immediately went into my news feed, and I had like over 200 subscriptions at the time, and I nuked all of them and said, I'm going to wait to see which ones I genuinely miss reading. And then if I do, I'll add it.
Yeah.
And I had three for a really, really, really long time. And that was it. That was good enough. Okay. All right. Let me clarify. If like I had like a friend had a blog or something like that, I still subscribe to that because they don't update, you know, they update like what, once a month. And
right.
And I didn't want to miss those because, you know, those were important. And like I said, it was once a month. It was like, I'm talking like news feeds, which right. Yes, like, I had like over 200 of those.
Yeah.
You know, I was doing the TechCrunch and Gadget, Gizmodo, Dig Top Stories. You know what I mean? I mean, we're talking yeah. a significant number of stories. Since then, partly thanks to this podcast, I have slowly crept up again. I think I get about 200 stories a day, I think.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
But I've gotten better about just scanning. And,
yeah.
You know, I go through it. But anyway, so all that to say, I did that. And then I did... there was one other thing that I did that that he actually mentions in this article here, and he mentions another thing which I'm gonna have to try, but because this is so true. Let me ask you this: how many times do you check your email a day? Let me try an easier one. How many times do you check it an hour?
Yeah, probably, definitely once in a while. I keep it open. I always have it open. Except during the podcast, let me lay this out there. It's terrible. I realize how terrible this is. Except during the podcast, I have my top five sites always open. Reddit, even at work. Reddit, don't listen to this, Bob. Reddit, email, Facebook, Twitter, and Pandora. And they alert me anytime anything happens. So it's, you know, basically I check it as often as something pops up. And, you know, Reddit, not as much. That one just kind of sits in the background. And
so let me ask you this.
But it's anytime I need it.
Currently right now.
Yeah.
How many emails do you have sitting in your email box, your inbox?
Oh, and I don't clear it out nearly as well as I should. Well, this is the best part because Google actually does it two ways, right? They only keep – my inbox is only my important emails, emails that it determines are, you know, flagged. I have 204, which means I probably have 1,000 unopened emails.
1,000. So I – nice. That's a lot.
Well, see, the thing is I don't even see that number. Like, I only worry about my top 20 emails. If you get past my top 20 emails, it means that you weren't actually important to me, which is
nice.
You know.
So I actually love that part about the email. I went from perpetually having 50 or so in my inbox, and, you know, or I should say, perpetually going from like 50 to 200, and, you know, never really catching up, that kind of thing. Always having more than I wanted. And I did one thing, and it has made all the difference in the world. And so, like, right now, so this is after a weekend and after me not really doing my email stuff. Yeah. Let's see here. I have 16. And just real quickly surfing, there's probably about half of them I will delete almost instantly, or, you know, I'll read it and delete it, type of thing. That's a high number for me because it's the weekend and I wasn't messing around with my email. So I mean, this information diet, and one of his points he brings up is it's part of it's about time too. You know, that's the one thing you really can't get more of or get any back. And so the question is, how do you save time, you know, in the sense that, you know, not take as much time to do things. And the advice that he gives is to turn off all your notifications. And that's actually what I do with email. So like on my work email, I don't have, there's not the beep, there's not the pop-up, none of that. I even take, when I minimize it, it minimizes way down, like out of sight. I do the same thing on my computer. I do the same thing on my phone. My phone is actually set up where it will not pull new email unless I actually open up the app. And I mean, and I got rid of the note, the little badge that tells me how many unread emails I have too. I literally don't do that. And so when I check email, it's because it's on my time and I'm not getting distracted by, oh, a notification, let me read it real quick. Because what I found I was doing was I was checking my email, oh my gosh, like 20 times an hour, like you, right? And but I was only checking it for 10 seconds, something like that.
Right.
Just long enough to see the email, maybe read it, but not long enough to respond, oh, I'll do that later. But I never had a long check-in period. I was only doing these 20-second check-ins, never long enough to actually reply back. Now when I check my email, it's longer than that, and it's purposeful, and it's enough to sit down and say, okay, I'm going to respond. And you know, you actually clean out your email inbox. So I think that's a great piece of advice, especially for if someone's listening to this podcast, they have a tendency to consume a lot of information. And yeah, that's my guess. And so that is just something where, yeah, that totally, totally makes sense. There's something one I think is interesting here, and I don't know how I'm going to do about it, but it says, stop using your iPhone as an alarm clock. When you do that, you've awakened, and now you have your iPhone in your hand. What are you going to do? You're going to check your email after you've turned off your alarm, and that stuff can wait. Instead, he says, instead, do something productive. And he says, turn off all notifications on every single app you've got. There's never, ever a reason you need to know now. Interesting. I might try that. But I like my Facebook notifications. That's a tough one. But I guess he's probably right.
I could probably do that. I could afford to do that. I ignore most of them anyway, so.
Yeah, so no, it's funny. I use my iPhone as an alarm clock. And what I have found, especially like thinking about the show and preparing for it and stuff, is I'll turn it off. And yeah, my order of operations is typically my email to my to-do list and then my news. And then I'll quickly scan the news and and it's actually recently I've started thinking, you know, I'm spending too much time in bed doing this news stuff. Tried to scale it back, but I don't know how I'm going to solve that one since I don't own another alarm clock. So
yeah, you know what, and to be totally honest, I tried to find an alarm clock and there's nothing but really spend like $150 on alarms. Nothing, pieces of garbage out there. It's frustrating.
Yeah, I understand. But no, this is very interesting, and I realize I completely interpreted it differently than you did, I think, but I think both are valid and interesting.
Well, I was going to say, the article covers an unbelievable amount of ground. His basic argument, and the things that don't matter. And because of that, it prevents you from being able to get what you do need in order to be an effective citizen and help the world out. And this technology is amazing and great and awesome if you let it be, if you have the right information to be able to utilize the right way.
You were trying to talk about how the article is long and covers multiple facets.
Yeah, it's just this long dynamic thing, and I think what the point of it was is you know, it's trying to make an argument for it. There's good information and important information, and technology can help and be awesome, but it can also prevent you from being an effective citizen and an effective, you know, person in your world. And, you know, ultimately, I think that's what I want to be, and that's what I want the people who I affect to be. And so I was just going to lead up to the whole thing of, and that's what I want the Furlough Bros podcast to do for people. So please don't cut us out of your diet. we like it when you listen.
Yes.
But we got to, you know, maybe we have more icing than necessary, but we try to bring you impactful, important information as well. No?
Yeah.
It's a good article. Right. I liked it. It's interesting.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. Any last things you want to chat about?
Let me see.
That's okay. If it's snow.
I'm pretty sure it's snow. I'm pretty sure it's snow.
All right.
I'm trying to. Yeah, nothing I can't get into. Implement. So.
All right. Cool. Well.
Cool. Cool. Cool.
Good talk. It was fun.
Yeah. You too.
That was cool. Now I gotta go like check out my diet of information. Go reevaluate it. Turn off all my notifications.
Right.
Oh man, love it. Cool. Well, I guess on that note, everybody, thank you for joining us. I am James Furlough, and my brother is Matthew Furlough. And we will talk next time. Here we are. Two guys on the internet.
We're not live, are we?
No, not quite yet. Oh, wait, now we are.
We are? What?
What do you think the countdown was for?
Well, I know, but I always get a little alert, which made it all the funnier when I would say, are we live?
Because, I didn't know that. Really?
Yeah. I get an alert, and I didn't get one this time. You sure we're live? I guess it doesn't matter that much. Most people don't. I feel bad for Yancey, but...
I'm recording, so...
That's the important one. Cool. Well, all right. Oh, well, so swell. If you can't hear us on YouTube, sorry!